Welcome back to The Working Week with me, Ben Askins, the show where we take challenging problems in working life and business and find out exactly what is going on and see if there's anything we can do to make it that little bit better. And today we are going to be doing what I think is a real public service, because you cannot turn on the news at the moment and not come across some sort of segment that goes like this.
We heard a lot about quiet quitting or quiet firing. Well, quiet cracking is the newest trend, replacing both of these, according to business health specialists.
The World Health Organization took the steps of defining burnout. Now, they defined it as a syndrome associated with chronic stress at work that often goes unmanaged.
Working overtime? No thanks. Late night emails? Ignore those.
Quiet quitting is referring to a situation where employees are making a choice to not necessarily go above and beyond what they're being asked to do.
In any big organization, but particularly in one like the post office with a fairly toxic culture at the time.
That is leading to a potential new trend dubbed revenge quitting in 2025.
So reverse mentoring actually started with Jack Welch and GE Capital in the 90s. He recognized that the leaders in the organization were so far removed from what was actually happening with the internet. So the younger individuals and generations that came in, he got them to mentor the senior leaders.
And so what I thought we'd do today is basically go through what I think are the top five most controversial or freshest or most relevant or newest or whatever you want to call it, and basically decide whether I think they are useful and productive in this day and age, or whether I think they're complete and utter nonsense. And I know I'm going to be making a lot of friends on this clip, so let's get into it and see what the first one is. Now, the first one is a very new phrase that's really kind of cropped up this year, and essentially it's the idea of burnout blocking. And basically the idea behind it is very simple. It's the idea that organizations are basically requiring to take action to prevent employees from being overwhelmed or reaching that actual burnout point. Now, being fully transparent, when I first saw this one, I did roll my eyes. And the main reason why, right, is not because I think this is a bad idea. It's simply because I just don't know why we need a phrase for what should just be basic competent management. Like, what on earth do you think your job is as a manager if it's not burnout blocking? Like, the idea that we required a sort of catchy, sort of news segmenty phrase to kind of basically describe what I would argue is your absolute bread and butter of being a leader in a company, I do find a sort of combination of a little bit frustrating, and if I think about it too much, a little bit depressing as well. But the more you look into it, right, the more you realize that actually having a catchy phrase does make people start to talk about it. And the reason why this is important for this particular example is that a recent study by BCG reveals that half of workers around the world are struggling with burnout. Half the world. That is absolutely ridiculous. We can't get half the world to agree on anything. And look, I know we can kind of go into defining what burnout is and all that sort of stuff, but like, ultimately, if people are feeling like that, that kind of is what it is, right? And so the people who just say, oh, they just need to sort of suck it up and pull up their socks and apply a bit of elbow grease are kind of missing the point, because if you are feeling burnt out, whether you agree that they are being burnt out or not, and I think it's a hard one to tell someone else whether they're being burnt out or not, by the way, but whether they feel or not doesn't matter. If that's where their head's at, they're not going to be doing quality work for you. Like, they're just not. There's no scenario where someone who is clicking yes in that column are also feeling like they're doing a good day's work or approaching anywhere near their best when it comes to stuff like this. So that's why I think it's important. But like, the report is, it does feel like My First Management or Management for Dummies a little bit, because it basically says they report burnout blocking as a crucial shift in thinking. And you have to say, what were people thinking before? And it's like, it's describing it as the difference between firefighting and future proofing. And you go, well, yeah, no shit, because obviously it's a good idea to try and prevent issues arising in your business. And this is what I mean, right? This is why I think it's just so basic. What, like, is management got that bad? Is that where we're at, where we're basically saying, like, guys, I've got a really good idea, okay? Rather than waiting until employees are completely fed up, like, maybe we should start thinking of, like, maybe if we want to actually make revenue and grow our business and do all the things we talk about on our marketing, maybe we should, like, take a few steps to stop that happening in the first place. You go, my God, like, some absolute geniuses are knocking around here, aren't they? And, like, this is my favorite bit. It's like, because burnout prevention is no longer just a nice to have, but it's now a competitive advantage. It's like, it was always a competitive advantage. It was always a competitive advantage. It was never a nice to have, even if you are the most sadistic, awful, horrendous boss in the history of working life, it was still an advantage to not have your team burning out. Like, of course it is. And you go, oh my God, well, if that's the level, then of course we needed the catchy phrase. So the final part of the report that annoyed me was basically they were talking about work worshipping, romanticizing, and basically how a lot of social media like glamorizes working really, really hard. And I'm talking like the nonsense working. I'm not talking about people who just kind of get up and do a solid day's work. I'm talking about the nonsense where you wake up at 5 a.m, meditate, have a nice bath, drink a smoothie that contains the elixir of life, you know, all that sort of stuff that we see countless times across social, mostly by people who have very, very rarely done a hard day's work in their life. But the issue I had with it was they kept talking about preventing overworking, and like they almost made it sound like a trade-off between like revenue generation and kind of looking after your team. And like this does my head in as well, because look, you have to think about your team. Look, think of it as a sports team, right? Your job is to kind of get the best output over the course of a season. You can't do that if you obliterate the team in week one, right? So you can have moments where absolutely, you know, there are times in a business working life, in a year, where there is just an insane amount of work, and it could be something like a big event or a launch, or it could be something like a new product goes live, or it could be, you know, a merger, you know, whatever it might be, right? There are times when you go, holy shit, that is going to be a real slog this week. This is going to be a huge grind. And people really like that, right? People feel great after a really hard week's work. The problem is if they follow one after the other, and this is my point, right? So this is where if you overwork someone, and I do mean overwork, right? Don't give me this, I can work 16 hours. You can't. No one can. If you are working 16 hours, they are not productive hours. Like, I really do mean that, right? I really fundamentally believe there is a cap on hours that you can put out when your output will significantly drop. And so you have to look after your team in the broad sense of my job is to get the best output from that team. And so when it comes to like revenue generation, you can't, there's no point making everyone pull all-nighters in the first week, because then they'll be dead for the rest of the month and won't be able to do anything else. So you have to manage your team in that sense. And so I think I'm going to allow this one, because like I said, I did roll my eyes when I first saw it, but kind of the more I kind of looked into it, the more I realized I just think we're at the point where we really do just need to teach people to suck eggs when it comes to like basic leadership in companies again. Which brings us on to the topic of quitting, and there's two types of quitting that are incredibly hot at the moment that people love to talk about. And the first one is quiet quitting, and Simon Sinek explains this one perfectly.
Quiet quitting is this thing where I don't quit the job, but I basically will dial back my effort and give you the minimum. So you pay me to do this job, and I will do the basic minimum amount to do the job, where you can't really fire me because I'm not really doing anything badly or wrong, but I'm also not going above and beyond at all.
And that's basically what quiet quitting is. It's I will do my job, I will do exactly what my contract dictates, but I'll do no more and no less. I will take my salary, thank you very much, but do not expect me to go above and beyond. Now, this actual phrase is a little bit controversial. People really don't like this phrase, and I will let this woman explain why.
So if quiet quitting means not going above and beyond and just doing what you're paid to do, like, isn't that just called working, like doing your job properly with a healthy boundary? Can we just call it what it is? It's called working, doing your job.
And I do get that. I do actually understand why people think that and why people feel that, because it is a little bit unfair to put it back on the employee saying, well, hang on, you're doing exactly what you're technically meant to do, but I'm going to give it a phrase, quiet quitting. The challenge we have is it is actually just called quiet quitting. It's one of that, you know, English language is dictated by usage, and that's kind of what everyone calls. So if it ever changes, I'll be very, very happy, I promise you, to change the words and use the new name. But while it's called quiet quitting, I don't really see a solution around, do you see what I mean? If I start to call it something else, everyone would just in the comments go, oh, that sounds like quiet quitting. So until we actually change the name, we kind of have to keep using it. But I do understand why people get a little bit triggered in regards to the phrasing of it, because quitting by definition sounds a little bit unfair. And I actually highly approve of this one. The main reason why I approve of quiet quitting so much, beyond the name, which I've mentioned, I know people don't like the phrase. The reason why I like it so much is because it puts the onus back on the leader and the employer to actually do something about it. And what I mean by that is it is your job to, as the leader, as the owner, as the CEO, whatever your rank might be, if you are managing people, it is your job to provide the motivation. So someone comes in and they say, right, this is my contract, this is my salary, I'm going to be doing this, that's kind of what I want to do. Great, understood. If you want them to go above and beyond, and that's, by the way, that's absolutely fine if you do, right? If you want to create an incredibly high-performing, meritocratic business, that is awesome. I am all for that. What you have to understand, though, if you want to do that, is it's on you to provide that owner and that motivation, right? What are you going to offer them in order to do it? You can't just expect that as a default. Why on earth would someone go above and beyond if you're not offering them anything in return? And that's where incentivizations come into it, right? It could be financial, it could be bonus, it could be work-life balance, it could be any number of things in regards to what it is. I recommend financial, that ultimately is what gets people out of bed, but it could be any number of things that you can do to get people to go above and beyond and want to do a really hard day's work for you. And that's why I love quiet quitting, because it reminds everyone that actually it's the boss's job to go about and doing it. And oh my God, the lack of responsibility I see these days in regards to people who basically, by the way, they spend their life saying, everything is my responsibility, I own the detail, I do this, and the second it comes to leave, they go, oh, come on, just pull your socks up and get on with it and do it yourself. And I expect absolutely 1,000,000%. It's like, no, that's your bloody job. Get on with it. Stop completely welching on that responsibility. And that brings us to the slightly more violent cousin of quiet quitting, specifically revenge quitting. Now, this is kind of what it suggests. It's basically a rising trend where people are basically quitting in the most inconvenient way possible, in a way that they're sort of saying, right, I'm actually going to go down the route of quitting at the most inconvenient time or in the most inconvenient place, or basically not really help you out at all in regards to handovers and things like that. Now, I'm not saying they like to break the rules. And again, that's really important. Like, they're not doing anything that breaks the contract or anything like that. That's not what we're talking about here at all. But they just, within the contract, make it as unhelpful as possible. So a good example would be quitting before a really busy time. That's a sort of prime example of what we're talking about there. And like a recent Glassdoor survey trends for 2025 revealed a wave of revenge quitting is on the horizon. And it's particularly popular among the younger generations. Like, QuitTok is a really big thing on TikTok, because of course it is. And like, what I would say to this one, right, is like, I get the inclination, and I know this is going to be a really boring thing to say, and everyone's going to roll their eyes, and I'm taking all the fun out of like the incredibly ridiculous and often quite creative ways that people are finding to kind of quit their job. And I guess I'm being a bit of a killjoy when I talk about this. I don't think that's a smart play. I don't think it's a smart play for two main reasons. The first is, if you do that to someone, and look, I am fully aware there'll be people who fundamentally deserve it, and most people revenge quit, right, are doing it for a very good reason, in the sense of someone's been perhaps just complete, and it's usually like personal, so it's usually because someone at the business or a boss or a manager rather than like the business itself. And I do understand this inclination, like, and people are often fully deserving of everything that comes to them when it comes to like people quitting and making their life inconvenient, right? I do get that. However, what I would say, and this is advice you can choose to take or just roll your eyes and slag me off in the comments, and I get that, your career is a long time. Right. And people remember if you screw them over. And now we can talk about the merits of whether they deserve to be screwed over or not. However, what I would say to this is, the people who are likely to carry the grudge are often the ones you're doing this to in the first place. Like, those sort of personalities tend to be a bit of a package deal. And like, you never quite know what's going to come next. You never know what's going to happen in your career where you might need someone to not like block you or have the ability to kind of hold you back. So that's what I'd say is reason number one. Reason number two is, you kind of have to think about your colleagues a little bit. Like, a lot of us have work friends and all of that, and like, inevitably, if you leave in an incredibly inconvenient way, the inconvenience is often felt by all, right? And you don't want to like damn it, you don't want people's last memory of you to be, I really wish they hadn't done that. Do you see what I mean? So like, I really do get the temptation. I'm not a huge fan of people like filming their quitting stuff, because I think it adds a performative element to it, which I don't think is very helpful. But again, I do understand why, and I know, by the way, I'm probably falling into a massive generation gap, and I do apologize if that's the case, but I do think it's something to kind of bear in mind moving forwards. Which brings us on to number four, specifically quiet cracking. Now, this one, more than any of the others, this one seemed to hack everyone off. And basically, like, the trend in regards to why people hacked off was basically people going, oh God, not another phrase that we now need to get our head around. And this quote summarize it perfectly for me. Now we're apparently quiet cracking at work. Can someone please let me know when we're doing a new thing? I can't keep up with all the quiet trends I'm supposed to be doing. And a lot of people in the comments agreed with this person, basically saying along the lines of, they're just giving stupid names to things that have existed for as long as office jobs have been a thing. And this comment, I think, summarized the main reason why. Yes, but this is modern journalism, so to keep it it fresh, they have to think of it stupid terms for common things. And I do buy that. How we consume content has just reduced so much into basically real size timestamps, so 1 to 2 to 3 minutes. And so you can't have those sort of like hour-long debates anymore. I know there's long form stuff out there, by the way, please don't correct me on that. But basically most content now is consumed in those sort of sound bites. And so to have those sound bites be effective, you need the catchy phrase to basically do it. And so that's why quiet cracking seems to have hacked a lot of people off. This one I'm not so sure about. And like the main reason why is I still, full transparency, struggling to get my head around exactly what it is. And like if I can't, and basically this is how I judge whether I like something or not, right? If I can't explain it, I don't like it. And what I mean by that is if it's so complicated and I can't give you like a really easy summary of it, I do think we've got a bit of a problem. And look, I am fully aware it might be that I'm just not getting this, right? But when I look at like definitions of it, it's basically saying things like it's the erosion of workplace satisfaction from within. And you go, okay, that sounds good, but it mean is pretty meaningless when you're looking at like actual details. That's according to a talent LMS survey. It goes on to say 54% saying they've experienced one or several aspects of quiet cracking, with 20% saying they're frequently or constantly battling those challenges. But when you like look into what those challenges are, they sort of say they didn't feel bosses appreciate them, they don't listen or notice them, and they aren't providing any paths for advancing their work careers. Now, obviously, I totally accept all of those things very much exist. I literally wouldn't have a social channel if they didn't. So those are very real problems a lot of people say. The main reason I don't like quiet cracking is I do feel like burnout blocking and quiet quitting kind of is enough, in the sense of basically quiet quitting is putting the onus on the positive and burnout blocking is putting on the negative, in the sense of burnout blocking is all about not allowing those issues to build up and cause problems, and quiet quitting is all about, look, if you want people to go above and beyond, you need to add that positive element, right? That kind of covers it for me. I don't feel like we need another one in there, because also what happens, right, if you have too many of these, they all just start to blur into one another. They get a little bit loose and woolly, like the description I described earlier, and it ends up not really helping anyone. So like I like to keep things nice and tight. I don't really think we need another one in there. So I'm going to put a bit of an X against that one, though. Please do let me know if you feel like I've completely misunderstood and got the wrong end of the stick there. Which brings us on to one of the favorite ones, the one that really kind of kicks off a proper generational scrap, which I know social media loves perhaps more than anything else. And that's the idea about reverse mentoring. Now, this isn't a new one, right? Some of the others we've spoken about today are very fresh. We're talking 2025 and onwards. This one is a little bit one that's been around, but it's kind of gone up another gear in the last few months, mainly because of AI and digital. So it kind of first happened. Basically, the idea behind it is instead of the manager teaching the employee is teaching the manager. Like the classic one was like millennials entering the workforce and teaching boomers how to use emails and mobile phones, right? Like that's kind of like the sort of iconic, perhaps first real moment of this. The problem we have now is we've got a younger generation who are way more on it when it comes to things like AI, social media, etc. And like Forbes ran this headline, reverse mentoring, why Gen Z is career coaching boomers. And poor boomers, I say poor boomers, like they're very rich boomers who've done very, very well a lot of the time. But in this sense, they do seem to be held up at the poster boys of just basically not being able to do anything new, which I do think is a little bit unfair, because obviously some of them very much are not the case. But I guess that's the problem with talking about generations in sort of sweeping statements. But look, basically the problem is what we're seeing is Gen Z's having to upskill a lot of people who are significantly older for them. Now, on the sort of surface, that's fine, right? Because of course it is. You know, you want a collaborative office. Some people are good at some things, others are good at others. You want people to share skills, cover weaknesses, and all that sort of stuff. The problem you have with reverse mentoring is that there's an obvious financial difference. And it doesn't take long in a culture for someone to start to feel, look, I feel like I'm not just carrying, I'm having to actively coach this person who is paid significantly more compared to what I am earning. And so when you start to say that, you start to go, okay, reverse mentoring, if left unchecked, does become a bit of a problem. So it's something I very much think is something you have to be aware of. I don't think it should be as simple of, oh, I taught that person, therefore I should be on paid parity. Obviously, that's not a thing. However, if you are in a situation where you've got people who aren't kind of pulling their weight at the top, and there are a lot of those knocking around, sadly, if you feel, and this kind of ties back to not just reverse mentorship, but basically people feeling like they're doing more than they should, that's a real red flag. That's something you really need to get on, because one of the leading reasons why good people, so we're talking like people you don't want to leave your business, quit, is often because they're feeling underappreciated, and reverse mentoring is very much a cadet branch of that. So look, obviously it's a little bit of fun talking about these sometimes, like they obviously spur a lot of debates, which is great, like they do address genuine problems, which is important of course, but I do think it's important to always like recognize that a lot of this stuff is pretty fucking basic. Like a lot of this stuff stuff you should just be doing by default, and you shouldn't need a catchy phrase. However, as we sort of established earlier, I do understand why that is. Because ultimately, like the end goal of all of this, right? The end goal of all these catchy terms and these snazzy news articles and all that sort of stuff is to create a better working environment. And when I mean that, by the way, and I know I keep saying this, but I do feel like I have to. When I say a better working environment, I mean productive. I mean output. I mean businesses growing, economies moving forwards, things, you know, not stagnating and all that sort of stuff. I just happen to believe that the best way to do that is to have a motivated, engaged and incentivized workforce. That's fundamentally what I believe it is. And it's something I've really kind of come to kind of grasp over the last few years, thanks to mostly all the stories and messages that people have sent me. And so I want to talk to someone to kind of soundboard of this. And so I was delighted to sit down with Philip Holmes, someone who I think is one of the most eloquent creators on toxic workplaces and actually creating a safe space for people to kind of establish communication and really like fundamentally understand like what they're looking for and how they can actually grow in their careers, as well as like looking out for the danger signs of the companies and people you want to avoid. And so I was absolutely delighted to sit down with him. It was a really interesting chat, and this is how it went.
A toxic workplace is a place where employees don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. They don't feel safe mentally. They don't feel safe emotionally. They don't feel like they have a voice. And the psychological component of a toxic workplace is really important, because sometimes I think that when we think about toxic, we think about things that are very loud, like yelling, screaming, you know, more the dramatic stuff that you see on TV when they're dramatizing.
Old school bad boss stuff, basically. Like.
Yeah, old school bad boss, exactly. But psychological safety is so important. Mm. It's the subtle things that I've seen some of the seemingly nicest bosses in the world get away with, because what they'll do is they will tell you one thing, but their actions and their responses or their reactions to when you speak up or when you voice disagreement, their response, they kind of, there's these subtle things that they'll do that, that you know, hey, no, that's a no-no, you don't do that. Everybody's going to have their sort of bad days, right? We all have sort of our toxic or even narcissistic moments. Mm-hmm. But if there is a pattern of behavior over time that you see that these things are done repeatedly without acknowledgement, without any type of recourse to say, hey, I want to go in a different direction. I'm really sorry about how I showed up yesterday. There's no apologies. There's no acknowledgement. As a matter of fact, there's doubling down. And there's justification. That's when you really know that you're in an environment that is really unsafe.
One of my favorite stats, I say favorite, one of my most depressing stats I know is that 82% of bosses or people who are managing someone are accidental managers. So didn't apply for the role, just sort of like, you know, and you know, I mean, we've both worked there, right? You know, you're in that position where you've just been there a few years and by default you end up leading people, right? So what do we do? What's the solution, do you think? I think where a lot of the toxicity comes from, it comes from a place of helplessness, right? It comes from a place of, and I get frustrated because I see two pieces of advice. If someone says, I have a toxic boss, you either get told to suck it up or quit and start your own business, basically. And I'm all for encouraging that second one, but it's not always the right move for everyone. You know, you can't necessarily, you've got dependents, you've got, you know, whatever it might be, you can't, it's not easy just to say that. So what's the solution, do you think? How do we, if you've got a toxic boss, what can you do?
I think the Western culture has an issue where we put money before everything else. We put money before people. We put money before values. And I think that the only way that corporations will listen and will change is if there is a movement of people who say, hey, I'm going to put my values first. I'm going to put my well-being first. I'm going to put my own growth and development first, and I'm going to choose who I work for based on those things first. Don't get me wrong. Salary matters. I think there has to be a balance where we have to dig a little deeper as professionals, and we have to say, all right, financials are important. I have to be able to have a livable wage, and I have to be able to take care of my family and take care of my responsibilities. But if it comes between me choosing, you know, a $200,000 salary or $150,000 salary at a company that I know is going to be toxic or that is a little sketchy versus a company where I can make $75,000 and I know I have an honest boss and I know that their cultures and their values are aligned with mine and that there's some growth potential there, I'm going to choose that company because there are more things there. But I think sometimes we make decisions in isolation. And so I don't know that there's anything that we can do on the business side, because I think that structurally, it's a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. When you have a board of directors who are primarily concerned with quarterly profits and not with the health and the welfare of their employees, or their customers for that matter, it's going to be really, really hard to change that system.
The problem we have at the moment, and I'm seeing this, and I'm really concerned for the next 12, 18 months, is we are in full belt tightening mode. And what I mean by that is seeing a lot of hires being pushed or even cancelled. We're seeing a lot of jobs sort of being reduced in regards to redundancies and things like that. And one of the biggest causes of that, and something that people don't really realize, is it just allows companies to start getting away with shit, whether it's, you know, starting to underpay and sort of race to the bottom on salaries, but actually allows them to get away with stuff that we've been talking about, which is that really short-term idiotic management. And that's the bit that does my head in. This isn't going to benefit your and I go back to that point I said earlier. It would fund, I wouldn't approve, but I really would understand if they said, look, it doesn't matter if they hate us. We're going to, but like, productivity is such a key part of an incentivized team, and productivity is what drives revenue and what drives profit. So it really does frustrate me that companies just seem to forget this when times get a little bit tough.
There's an emotional component, right, when it comes to leadership that so many individuals in corporate America just have not addressed or figured out within themselves. And there, oftentimes there's a lot of emotions that are driving decisions that simply just don't make sense, right, to people who have a high level of emotional intelligence. And so I think a lot of times, and when you talk about middle managers who are doing this, a lot of times the middle managers are getting the pressures from the individuals at the top. And so you even may have a middle manager who wants to do the right thing, who wants to do a good job with their people, but they're being asked to do things that they don't necessarily agree with. And so they feel compromised. And so I wonder the emotional intelligence component, if that could explain some of the illogical things that some of these very smart people that we know are smart people, that they end up doing that just simply don't make any sense.
One of the things we were talking about earlier in the piece was around like these more like cultural buzzwords that get thrown out. So quiet quitting, quiet crashing, reverse management, like all these sort of phrases. Where do you stand on that? Do you find them helpful as discussion points? Is it helpful to kind of give a name to something? Because I think some people will criticize and say, oh, it's just another fad, or it's just another trend, or we always have to name something. Do you see what I mean? So where do you stand on phrases like those and phenomena like those? And do you think they're helpful to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're helpful to talk about because they are they're coming from realities. Quiet firing is a real thing, right? Quiet quitting is a real thing. And they call out problems that we absolutely have to be aware of and address. That validation, you know, a lot of people that follow me, they enter into sort of, I guess, the funnel, if you will, because they recognize, like, I didn't have language for this before.
Yeah,
I didn't know what to call this. Even when I was going through it three, 4 years ago, I had no idea, you know, what it was called, how to talk about it. And so I think that language alone can be very, very healing. And so when you talk about quiet firing, quiet quitting, and you can say, hey, that's kind of where I'm at, or that's what happened to me, I think that can be very, very illuminating, and that can be that first step towards health.
And exactly that. It allows you to start to recognize the signs, those patterns that we spoke about, and actually start to reflect on where you are at personally in that journey. Is it a fair name? So I guarantee when we clip this up and post on socials, talk about quiet quitting, I guarantee we're going to have people saying, shouldn't use the name, it's not a fair thing, because basically, and I do totally understand this point, they always say it puts the blame back on the employee. Basically, it sort of says, look, they're not quitting, they're just doing their basic requirements of the contract, which is doing the work. To imply that they're quitting is unfair, basically. What do you think on that?
I don't see it as necessarily putting the blame on the employee. I do think that there's a level of disengagement that if you are not in a place where you can show up 100%, bringing your full self, that is a form of quitting, right? Mm-hmm. There's a valuable part of you that is required, really, that you want to be there if you're going to get the best possible outcomes and the best possible results. And so I want my employees to want to be at work. I want them to look forward to coming to work. And everybody's going to have their bad days where they don't feel like coming in. And I want them to have the freedom to say, hey, I need the day off, right? Because I want them here and I want them to be ready to be here. And so we're really big on self-management. But when someone is in an environment where they can't necessarily do that and they have to show up and do a set of tasks or they have to show up and deal with people that they don't want to really deal with, they're going to kind of isolate, disengage, and basically do the basic, the bare minimum to get their paycheck to protect themselves. And to be honest, I couldn't blame them. Yeah. I don't blame somebody who does that when they have a tyrannical employer.
It's the one point I always think I've never quite grasped is why on earth would you blame the employee for that? Like your job as the manager, if your job as the manager is not to provide basic motivation for someone who wants to be at the job, what on earth do you think your job is? Like genuinely, what do you think your role is at that point? And so you see these batshit crazy things online where someone just goes, oh yeah, Gen Z's, I've got a 22-year-old and he doesn't want to work. And you go, I'm sorry, what do you think your job is? Like your job is to coach, is to train, it's to manage, it's to engage, and it's to basically incentivize someone to want to do a good job. Like the idea that people just show up self-motivating, you just go, well, then your role's redundant, isn't it? So I've never quite understood that idea. And then in regards to the name, yeah, I totally agree. And also that's just kind of the name, that's the problem. It's like, I understand why people don't like the phrase quiet quitting. But if we gave it a new name, all the comments would just be, oh, that sounds like quiet quitting. Like, that's just kind of the name of it at this point. We just sort of need to own that a little bit.
Yeah.
So final thought. So if a manager was listening who wants to lead a high-performing, motivated, engaged sort of team, what would be your biggest piece of advice in regards to how they should act as the leader of that team?
I would say great leadership first starts with self-management, self-leadership. Right? You have to take a look at yourself. And here's the reality. When you are the boss, when you're the leader, everything falls back on you. All roads lead back to you. All problems lead back to you. And so you got to be asking yourself when you're dealing with employees, is this a systemic issue, right? Or is this a personal performance issue? A systemic issue means that you've created an environment that does not get the best out of this individual. A performance issue means that you have to talk and deal with this individual, but even then you got to inquire, you got to ask questions to try to understand what the actual problem is instead of going in with accusations based off your limited perspective. And so what I always tell employers is that you got a bad employee. Well, who hired them? You did. You brought them into the company, right? And whose job is to either coach them into a better employee, or if they're toxic or if they're bringing problems into your company that are not a part of the culture, right? It's your job to deal with that as well. But everything leads back on you. You're the only one that can fix this. And if you keep getting bad employees, the common denominator is you.
It is amazing how people, and it's nearly always the LinkedIn lot, and I'm one of those people, so I'm sort of very much slamming myself here. It's amazing how many people who spend their life messaging on LinkedIn saying how their life is their responsibility and they take ownership of this, that, and the other. It's amazing how quick they are to palm off the leadership duties of their own company.
That's a good point. I never thought about that one. Yeah.
Right. Blow my mind. It's like, oh, no. You know, everything is all under my control until it goes badly. And then, you know, it's the 22-year-old who's got 3 weeks experience who's to blame for the hiring issue.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Well, look, Philip, honestly, you've been such a hit on social and I totally see why. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate you taking the time. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone thinks.
Pleasure, Ben. Thank you for having me.
I found that chat with Philip so interesting. He's such an eloquent person. Like, I really did enjoy it. And he really does. He's just one of those people, basically. You know when you just, someone just makes you think about things in a slightly different way? Like, I found he's such a good person for something like that. And I think that's why he's obviously so rightly popular on social at the moment. But when it comes to these buzzwords and trends, like, ultimately, I think they're helpful, right? And the reason they're helpful is they do get people talking about whether they think they're are problems or not. And like the first way to solve a problem is to kind of define what it is. And I do think these trends and buzzwords very much help. And so overall, I am going to give a little bit of a positive tick. I would say we've got to be careful not to make one for the sake of it. Like, I really do think we have to be slightly careful in that sense, because I do think it makes a big difference in the long run whether we actually really are going to solve some of these issues. And by the way, I mean this, it's in everyone's best interest, right? Everyone wants a productive workforce because that's what helps companies grow, it helps businesses grow, it helps founders make more money, it helps governments because economy's moving, all that sort of thing, right? It is win, 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 win if we get a productive team going. And the way to do that is to kind of address a lot of these problems that these terms are designed. So by definition, I think these are good things. You got to be tight on them though. You can't allow some of these wishy-washier things. And I'm not saying that as like a sort of, oh, just pull your socks up and get on with it kind of approach. I mean, like, you'll damage like the more productive ones is kind of what I mean. But as ever, I really want to hear what you think. Please do let us know in the comments. If you have time to give this a quick like and subscribe, if you've got this far, maybe you think it deserves it, please do let me know, because it does make a huge difference to the channel. If there are topics as ever that you want us to cover, please do let us know in the comments and we will come up with a new solution. We've got some really cool ones coming up. I can't wait to share it with you. Otherwise, I will catch you all next week. Thanks so very much.